you know, it was 70 degrees, a gentle breeze, negative ions in the air. They're the good ones that make you feel good. Gentle water was lapping up on the shore of Pelican Lake. And there I was in a cabin that was about 200 feet away from the lake itself. And I was sitting in my little cabin waiting for classes to start. My wife and I were working, and we were in charge of the wilderness canoeing program at SEP camp. My son was almost 4 years old. He was 3 years old, and he was in the cabin. And we somehow lucked out. When you have a child and you have a TV at camp, that was amazing. And we were watching The Magic School Bus. You may not know what that is, but it's an educational show. Okay, you do. Okay, all right. So we're watching The Magic School Bus, and I said, son, I have to go down and start open canoeing. Would you like to come down with me, or do you want to stay and finish this Magic School Bus? He said, oh, Dad, I want to stay here, watch The Magic School Bus. I said, okay. I said, if you need me, you just call out my name and say, Dad, and I'll come. And so, well, that was fine. I went down, sent everybody else on the lake. Everything was wonderful. I sent off the last canoe, and then all of a sudden I heard, Dad! Oh, my mind started rushing. I ran probably, if you timed me, I may have set a record, running that 200 feet back to my cabin. And during that time, I don't know if you know this, but when adrenaline is rushing through your body, everything goes into slow motion. So I had enough time to think about a lot of things. What had happened to my son? Had he gotten to the knife drawer, pulled it out, and gotten cut up from the knives falling on him? He was fond of throwing things in the toilet and flushing them. I said, did he get his foot caught in there and twisted around in there? And then I started thinking, what kind of idiot leaves a three-year-old alone for any length of time? And I mean, I'm telling you, I was so scared, and my heart was pumping as fast as it could. And then I got to the screen door, and I jerked it open, and there was my son sitting exactly where I left him. I thought, did I really hear him call out my name? And I said, yes, I know I heard him. You know, was this like the emergency broadcast system that comes on the radio or television? If a real emergency were happening, useful information would follow. No useful information followed. Not only that, he didn't even look up at me. I thought, I'm thinking in my mind, I said, after my heart's beating like this, and I'm like, I'm not really that happy about this. And I said, Andrew, if you don't really need me, don't call out my name. He finally stopped from the TV and looked up and said, but I did need you, Dad, and looked back at the TV. Now I'm even more confused. So I asked him again. I said, well, son, what did you need? And he looked at me and thought for a minute. And he said, Dad, I love you. Do you know how that affected me? I sat down next to him. I put my arm around him. And I said, son, if you ever need to tell me that, feel free to call out my name at any time. And I went back to my job, not even realizing what had happened. But I learned fairly quickly. And I was thinking to my mind, I said, now, am I training him or is he training me? You know, trains me to come when he needs me, you know, that type of thing. Well, no, it's much more serious than that. And you may not realize this, but every one of you in this room has an emotional tank. Your emotional tank fluctuates. Sometimes it's quite full, sometimes it's quite empty. My son's tank, being there alone without me sitting next to him, was running very low. He had an emergency, and I didn't even realize it. That emergency was his tank needed to be filled. So my coming there and my presence there helped fill his tank, so that's why he didn't have to look up. He knew that I'd be there to protect him if he needed me. That's all he needed was that little bit of reassurance. Do you know kids show their emotions on their sleeves? You can see exactly how they feel at any time. As a matter of fact, go ahead and try this. If you have a new child that's 2 or 3 or 4 years old and you see them for the first time, talk to them or say hello to them. Be as nice as you possibly can, and you have just drained their emotional tank so much that they rush back to who? That's right, Mom. And they hold on to her like a barnacle on a ship. Oh, they're holding so tight. You've just drained their emotional tank. You were trying to be friendly, and what'd you do? The exact opposite. You made them feel completely uncomfortable. Can you believe that? That's what we do to little kids? What about adults? Did you know adults have the same emotional tank? And God wants our tanks to be filled. And do you know He's the greatest encourager in the universe? But for some reason, God always chooses to use man to help other people. He chooses you and I to help other people and help their tanks to be filled. He wants to use us because we developed so much ourselves when we're able to help other people. You know, does God know these people that we mentioned and prayed about just a minute ago, that they need his help and what they need? We know he does. Will he heal people that need healing at the right time and the right place? Yes, he will. But why does he ask us to pray for them then? Because he's not just teaching the people who are sick or ill and need the help. He's teaching all of us to learn to love each other better. It's hard to pray for someone and not love them more. God says to pray for your enemies. How can you hate your enemies if you're saying a prayer for their good? Is that amazing? He has it worked out. But I'm saying we have to figure it out ourselves too. How in the world are we going to help fill emotional tanks unless we know how to do it? So I'm going to give you some practical examples today that tell you today what you can change and do to make it so that you will become a source of encouragement rather than a tank drainer. First, I'm going to put it in concrete methods. I'm a teacher, not much more than a preacher. So when I teach my kids the concrete method and show them how this works, and then I can tell them the abstract way, they learn it so much better. And in church, I always start my sermons and talk to the youngest kids first. And I put it into practical terms. And then I move on to the adults because I know how long little kids can pay attention. And then it's time for the adults. Do you know I have so many people come up to me and they say, "Oh, I really liked your sermon." Do you know what they always mention? The concrete part. I've learned that we all need to have the concrete side. You can be told over and over again about the theories and the academic side of things and everything be wonderful. And I talk to my kids all the time, and I use letters for numbers like you do. And people say, "Oh, I used to understand math until they started using letters for numbers." What kind of crazy stuff is that? The change is you're going from the concrete to the abstract. So my topic today is going to be something related to something that's on your wall. It's so important to you here that you've actually put it up on your wall. Do you know that someone asked Christ one time, it's a good question, I think. They said, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" What did he say? I need your help here. So, what did he say? Very good. That's one of the laws. Love the Lord your God with all your mind, with all your heart, and all your soul. Isn't that what's said right up here on the first one? Do you see what it says? It says, love your father. And then it lists the first four commandments. Because those four commandments break down how to love God in those first four ways. And then you have next to it what he said. He went on. They didn't ask him about this, but he said, well, the second commandment is like unto it. The second greatest commandment. How is it like unto the first one? Well, I'll tell you how it's like it. I don't believe you can get to the second commandment fully unless you fulfill the first commandment first. We first have to love God, and he loves us and shows us how to love others. Do you know where I'm getting to? What I'm getting to? I'm getting to the point of saying, how does God teach us to encourage others? You know, another word for encourage is to love others. You're loving others when you're showing encouragement to them and doing things. And when you do something at any day, at any time, that you wouldn't regularly have done because you know God wants you to do it, that's a miracle. Some of us don't believe that miracles are happening in our lives very much anymore. I'm telling you, they're happening so many times in your lives, you can't imagine how many miracles are going on. Because every time you're influenced to do something you wouldn't regularly do, that's a miracle. It really is. So we're moving to the second commandment. And yes, you've heard these things before, but have you been given the wherewithal and the understanding of how to do this in a specific way? So let me bring it down to a concrete level. And I'll tell you how to do this with little kids, first of all. Do you know there's kids that started attending our church, younger ones? And one of them was Emily. And Emily was the cutest little redhead. I don't know how old she was when she started. She might have been 2, maybe 3. And I could see from other people interacting with her that she was hanging on to her mom so tight every time someone would almost walk by. So what I did is when I walked by her, I said, "Hello," and I took off before she could even have her tank drained. The next Sabbath, took a whole Sabbath, another week, I came in, "Hello, I like what you're wearing." And I left before she could even go back to her mom. She did go back to her mom, so I could tell her emotional tank was remaining high. Do you know I did that every week for many, many weeks, adding a little bit to it every time. Another clue is, don't stand over a small child and talk to them. They think you're a giant. If you get down on their level, and especially if you have a deep voice, don't use the deep voice. It scares them to death. Do you know that I worked with her to the point where I was able to touch her pinky with my pinky, and she didn't go back to her mom. I asked her, could we please just touch pinkies? And finally, that's the first contact that I had with her. And the next week, I worked up to two fingers. Got up to a whole handshake. And I mentioned it in front of the church when we first touched pinkies. And I told them how excited I was about it. And I could see her back there, and she had this smile coming out of her face. Really big smile. Do you know, after a while, she loved it when I came and said something to her and said hello. And I got down on one knee or got down to her level. And it got so much so that she felt so comfortable around me. Do you know what she did when she saw me at the Sabbath services? She saw me and ran to me and jumped up in my arms and gave me the biggest hug. Do you know how that made me feel? She was actually filling my emotional tank. But the fact was, is what was the change occurring now? The change, to be honest with you, was I now became a source of encouragement to that little girl, Emily. Can we become emotional sources to those people that are around us, whether they're little kids, adults, or other people? How do we do that? How do we go about that so that we don't do the exact opposite? We all have different ways of approaching each other. Some of us are intrinsic, we're inside, and other times we have a lot of people that are vivacious and they love people and being around them. You have to figure out what they want or like. You know, I saw some of you coming in before Bible study. I didn't get to talk to a lot of you, but is there someone in here that I hugged today? Did I hug you today? Oh, all right. There's a few of you. Well, do you know I'm going to talk about that too? Do you know that some people have an encouraging tank that fills by someone giving them a hug? Is that amazing? So what are other ways and different things that we can help build people up? Well, I'm going to first start about talking about a way to encourage others. I'll call it the encouragement language. And some of you already figured out I've stolen this, haven't I? Yeah, so I've stolen it from Gary Chapman. And he has a book he's written, The Five Love Languages. And I've changed his book to The Five Encouraging Languages. People are so much more accepting of helping others when you say, oh, you're going to be doing this and encouraging these people, other people. But really, what is encouragement to one another? If you help encourage someone, you're truly showing love to them. So let me talk about the first one. And I don't know how many of you love this one. Everybody has different gifts. Different gifts themselves, but most people love to get or receive a gift. I'm not saying that's your number one thing as far as what encourages you the most. Some people, a gift is a gift is a gift. But others, they are really happy when they receive gifts. So, Michaela, could you come up in this little suitcase over here if you could get this? Michaela is my daughter, so I really appreciate her helping. Maybe my wife can help too. What I've done is, I've bought you all a present. Isn't that wonderful? Yes, I know. Well, sorry, it's from the dollar store probably, but okay, if you could go get this and take this out. And there'll be bags, and I'd like you to pass them down the aisle, about four or five bags. Pass them down. Have you passed the plate before, obviously, with the basket? This is the same thing in reverse. Okay, so everybody in this room, I'd like for you to take something. And if you don't like what you took, you see something better, then go to that. Don't do that. I'll have some things left over that you can go look at afterwards, and you can trade if you want to or things like that. You may not find in your package something that you really like. But I'd like for you to take it. Why am I doing this? Because it's concrete. Do gifts help encourage people? Some of you may be encouraged, even though this gift is so small. But you know this. I must have spent time going out and looking and shopping for you. I didn't know who you were, but I went out and shopped. My daughter laughs at me and she says, no one's going to want that, Dad. Well, by the time she gets through what I've got, she says, no one's going to want that to almost everything. So, hopefully you'll find something that could be useful, like a little flashlight or a calendar or something like that. So, were there calendars in there?
No, we just got the
bag. Oh, okay. If you can get the other things out, too, if you want to. This is fantastic. Have you ever done this at church before? So what do I mean by concrete? I want to show you how to be encouraging to others. My mother loves gifts. One of the most important things you can do if you want to become a source of encouragement is find out what their encouragement way is. If they like gifts, that's what you want to focus on. Do you know what we do? We're basically selfish, aren't we? We have a certain way. Oh, I'm probably making all kind of noise to the people that are listening online. Sorry about that. I've been hitting my mic. Well, you need to work at finding out what their love language is. You know, I've already told you, kind of, one of my best love languages is physical touch. I love getting hugs and I love giving hugs. Now, I'll talk about that in a little bit later, but I want to say my wife loves acts of service. You want me to do what? Dust? That means you feel loved if you have dust for you? And I'm thinking, all I need is a hug, you know, and I'm happy with that. We want to give hugs if we like hugs when someone else, our mates, want something else. Let's figure out what other people like and want. When I'm going through this list of five things that you can do to encourage others, find out which one is your love language, which one is your encouragement language, and make sure that those people that are closest to you, you know what their love language is too. You know what they get encouraged most by, and practice that. It won't feel comfortable at first, but as a matter of fact, I can tell you this, you know, dusting the house, or the other thing, my wife hates two chores, dusting and folding the clothes. I'm thinking, what's wrong with those things? I don't want to scrub the toilet. How easy do I have it, you know, if I just focus on those type of things? So I look at what she likes, and I try to practice what she likes as far as giving her encouragement and showing her love. Jesus said, love your neighbors as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Matthew 22:27-28. So he tells us to do this. I've got scriptures. You don't know how many scriptures I have about how to show encouragement to one another. And Christ is the best example of encouragement. And he's done all of these things. What is one of the greatest gifts he's given to all of us? His sacrifice, that's right. He's given us forgiveness, right? That's a great gift. Oh, my Bible fell down. Yes, he has given us forgiveness. He's done every one of these things. And when you hear them, think about what he's done in his example. So, gifts are a wonderful thing that we can do. It doesn't have to be expensive. People say it's the thought that counts. Yes, it really is. When you realize someone gave you that gift, but they had to go and do some work to do it, you know they were focused on you. You know, we have a strong love for other people who do things for us. And that effect is felt when you're given gifts. Not everyone in here was excited about their wonderful, expensive $1 gift. But some of you probably did have a little twinkle that says, hey, I feel pretty good about this. And your emotional tank was filled a little bit more. I don't think anyone's tank was drained by receiving a gift. And you got to choose your gift. So let me move on to the second one. That is words of encouragement. That is so cheap and so easy to do, but some of us will live with someone your whole life and never provide very much encouragement. You know, you may not be the type of person that words of encouragement help you, but I can tell you this, there are some people that live and die by words of encouragement. It's not wrong to enjoy someone that praises you. And I'll tell you a time, again, being concrete, that I was working very near here in Big Sandy, Texas. And you know what my job was at Ambassador College in Big Sandy? I was working on the farm. And do you know, I felt that was the most prestigious, the very best job possible at Ambassador College. And I really still believe it. It was so fun being on the farm. And I had different jobs. I was the only one on the farm that was assigned to learn every area that people were working. We had fence builders, and they taught me how to build fences, and sometimes I'd work with them. They had people that were running the tractors and poisoning the gophers, and they taught me how to do that and run the tractor. They taught me how to irrigate. They taught me how to milk the cows. They taught me all of these different things that I had to do on the farm because I was the floater, and anytime they needed extra help somewhere, that's where they would send me. And one time I was talking to my boss, and I said, you know, he was saying, do you know why I picked you to do this? I said, oh, I have no idea, but I love it. Every day I do something different. He says, because there are some unusual characters that work here that don't work very well with some people. But I found that you can work with each one of them, and they're all happy. Because some people like to be in charge. And I say, so what? Tell me what to do. I don't mind. Other people like to have someone else tell them what to do. Well, oh, I can do that too. So when I was on the farm, there was so much encouragement every day from people that were around me and with me. But the one thing that bothered me was I was voluntold to milk the cows on the Sabbath sometimes. That didn't bother me. But when you get up at 5:30 in the morning, sometimes in Texas, although it doesn't sure look like it now, I mean, this is beautiful here in Tyler. We love Tyler. 70 degrees today? I mean, so this may be hard for you to believe, but I was cold at 5:30 in the morning going out to milk the cows sometimes. And I must have said that in a letter or something, because fairly soon after that, I got a gift. I was so happy. When you're at college, getting a gift from home is amazing for your emotional tank. So I was so excited. I didn't care what it was, but it was pretty big. And so I went to the mail room and I picked up my package and I opened it up. I looked inside. And my mom had sent me insulated coveralls. I mean, you talk about someone who was happy. The first thing I did is I threw them on and I was burning up. And you know, first thing you do when you put them on, you put your hand in your pocket. I pulled out a note. Keep up the good work. But always remember, your first priority is to be good to your big sister. That's from my sister Laura. She really did write that, you know. I said, make sure you're sure. I thought, what do you think? I put my hand in one pocket and got a note. What do you think I thought? Could there? Would there be another note? I reached down to my next pocket, and I reached in. Oh, another note! I'm proud of you, Dad. Well, that was so wonderful. It almost makes me cry now. It does make me cry. Anyway, words of encouragement were amazing. And do you know how many pockets are in a coveralls? There's a lot of pockets. But there are a lot of kids in my family. There's 6 kids in my family and my parents. And I'm sure this is my mom going around to all the kids. Yes, you have to write something. Yes, you have to write. So I kept searching and I'd search around and, oh yeah, here's another pocket. What's in here? Oh, I was so excited. This is like a, you know, it's like a game show. Here it says, we miss you. Okay. So in every pocket there was something. There were more than 7 of them, 7 notes, but my mom filled in the rest. So she had extra comments and things like that. Do you think words of affirmation or words of encouragement are helpful? I'm telling you, that day I was on cloud 9. I don't know how long it lasted, but every time I went to milk the cows and I was very warm, I thought about this wonderful gift that my mom had sent to me. So don't forget, anytime you can, if you have an opportunity to say something nice to someone, do it. I've heard people that have gone all their life and someone who they love, they've never told that I love you. How come it's so hard for us to do that? To tell people that we love them? You know, I think it possibly stems from maybe we think we're weaker if we have to say we love somebody else. I'm telling you, make yourself feel weaker, say it. You won't believe that it not only helps their emotional tank, but your emotional tank will be filled too. So those 2 ways you can do it, words of encouragement, gifts. Let me talk about the third way. Third way is spending quality time. You know, sometimes we say hello to someone and goodbye before there's anything else done. At work, people always say, well, how are you doing? If they say that, they basically just want one response. Fine, or whatever. They don't want to sit down and hear about all your problems, right? There's so few people in the world left today that are willing to sit down and really listen. You know, I found a lot of people just want someone that can be there and listen to them. I found myself spending a lot of time in my office at work, and custodians from all over would come and stop by my office. And I got to trying to figure out what is going on here. And then I realized I was listening to them. They would come and tell me things and discuss this and that and things like that. I didn't really get too many words in edgewise, but they found someone that was a good listener. And that made their day. It filled their emotional tank that someone was willing to listen to them. They're doing the hard work, the dirty work, the stuff that is not fun whatsoever. And they really felt like they needed an outlet somewhere. And I'm telling you that if you'll just spend a little bit of quality time with other people, you'll make a huge difference in their life. Everything that I'm talking about, I said, Christ did the same thing. Can you think of any time when Christ spent quality time with people? Did he listen to people? You know? Well, think about his disciples, like I mentioned before. He spent night and day with them. Sometimes they slept outside. He went places with them. He took them. He mentored them. Man, he was a huge part of their life. If you don't understand the culture from back then, it's basically the parents give over their children to their rabbi or the person who is going to teach them. And there's a certain number of years that he stays with them and teaches them. And he will be the most influential person in their life. He was willing to spend that time with them, although he only was on this earth for a very short time. So he spent time with people. When they were telling him the story about the lady who had committed sin, and she was there, and they said, you know, they were trying to encourage him to be the first one to throw a stone to kill her. He listened to the whole story, and it seems like he sat down for a second and didn't say anything for a minute. And it seemed like he was scribbling in the sand, is what I heard. And this is conjecture, of course. It's not from the Bible. But someone told me, and I like this possibility, that what he was scribbling in the sand was the sins of every accuser that was there. And he was telling them, oh, any of you who are without sin, you feel free to cast the first stone. And can you imagine if he really was writing a sin down that they were doing? When they saw it was their name that was coming up, I think they would have split pretty quick. Do you see everybody split? I mean, because what was going to happen next? They're going to be the next one on the chopping block. But he waited and listened to the whole story. He had to do that over and over again, even though he knew the answer. Because it says over and over again, he knew what they were thinking before they said it. But he would sometimes wait for them to say it. Sometimes he just blurted it out. And that's when they were shocked and knew that he was very special. They knew that he was the king. It's amazing the quality time that you can spend with others and what it does for them. Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. When Jesus was on the mountaintop, that time was shared with only three of his disciples in Matthew 17, 1 through 9. Also, he would be taken away by the authorities very soon and be killed. He gathered his disciples and they ate. They talked. He took the first... He did the Passover and sung a hymn and prayed, and we see that in the book of John that Jesus also washed the feet of his disciples. That's spending quality time with someone, but it's also serving them. It's an act of service, which is another way to encourage others. I want to read this too, because I skipped over it a little bit too quick. Words of encouragement. Well done, thy good and faithful servant. How many of us, when we're there in God's kingdom, if he said that to us, there is nothing else that could fill your emotional tank more than that. And you know you've made it to his kingdom when he says that to you. He encouraged his disciples over and over again when he said things about them. What did he say about John the Baptist? It was pretty incredible how he complimented John the Baptist. He said, more than a prophet, and among those born of women, there has arisen no one greater. Did he have words of encouragement for his disciples and others that were around him? Everywhere he went, people were encouraged by what he did and said. Some of the most important words of encouragement are recorded in the Bible. They're powerful because the words themselves, they're words spoken to others about a person, and are more powerful than if you actually tell it to the person themselves. When they find out that you were complimenting them to someone else, it's the exact opposite of what happens when someone finds out that you said something negative about them behind their back. You see how hurtful that is. You can also see how helpful it is the other way around. Jesus compliments Peter when Peter identifies Jesus as the Christ, the Son of the living God. He asked who I am. In Matthew 16:15, and in Mark, he did this also, and it's recorded in Mark 12:34 and Mark 12:43. I have all these scriptures actually written on a sheet if you want to pick one up later. I'm not expecting you to turn to these scriptures because I'm going through quite a few of them. And I'm trying to be as concrete as I can, and you can read these scriptures later. That'd be great. When Jesus heard that the centurion believed that Jesus could heal without having to go there to the person, he said something about the centurion. He said, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. Words of encouragement to that centurion. Amazing faith he had. Because do you notice in the Bible that many people wanted Christ to heal them, and they called him and said, please come to our home and heal so-and-so, Lazarus or anyone else. But this man knew, just like he had been in the army, and he said, I know if my boss tells me to do something, it could be my life if I don't follow his directions. So I know you have the same authority to heal people. So I don't have to have you come to my house. I just know if you say the word, that they'll be healed. So isn't that interesting? Back at quality time, how in the world can I show you concrete ways to have quality time with others? Do you know that writing a letter to someone is a lost art? We send texts and emails, and we've lost something. We've lost something that really encourages others. Do you know, I believe everybody in this room, when you get a letter that looks like it's handwritten, as a matter of fact, advertisers sometimes use this, it looks like it's handwritten, you go to that letter first and open it. And why is that? Because this really is someone who probably cares about me. It's a real person who knows who I am and knows something about me, and you will read that letter. One time I received a letter from my niece out in Washington State, and I was just so shocked. I got a letter from my niece. I mean, that was pretty amazing. I read it, and it was so cute. And so I immediately pinned a letter back to her, and I sent it the same way that she sent it. And then she sent me another letter. And so I started putting jokes in it, knock-knock jokes and other things that my daughter cringes at, you know, and says, those are dad jokes. They're terrible. So I sent them anyway. And I was having so much fun and things. But her mother called and said, do you know that we were kind of doing something? It sounded like she was doing kind of an experiment. And she sent out so many letters. I don't know how many letters she sent out, but you're the only one that wrote one back. So let's not do that. I have a friend who, he loves letters. Of the most encouraging thing in his life, if he gets a letter from someone that's handwritten, it's wonderful. He practices that, and he sends the most beautiful written, as far as the way he words it and the way he writes itself, letters that I've seen of anybody. And they're fantastic. And he loves to receive them in return. It doesn't have to be this long, drawn-out thing. Sometimes you pull out the letter thing and you say, oh, I'll make a mistake. I'll do this or I'll do that. I'm sorry to tell you, but I don't care if you make spelling mistakes or other mistakes. What you'll do for that other person is so much more valuable than the little bit of embarrassment you might feel. So write a letter. As a matter of fact, I don't know, did you all see in there some envelopes in the suitcase? Okay. Well, maybe I put it somewhere else. Let's see. Okay. Let me look in there. Just so you know, that before you leave today, I will set out, maybe 100 different note cards. A few say thank you, most of them are blank. But you know, the biggest encouraging thing that you could do for me is to actually take one. Now, whether you write something or not, I won't know. But I'm telling you, it's going to be encouraging if I think that something I said had you act on that. So if you want to thank someone that's speaking in front of you, do something in your life that makes it better, that makes you closer to God. So if you take a note and you write something to anyone and encourage them, that means that I've been successful. We were taught how to give stir to action, you know, and different types of speeches all along. And again, that's the key. Is if something I say changes you and what you have to do, that means that God is working through you to become more like Him and do something like He would do. He uses us to fill emotional tanks of others. So what's another way that we can do that? What's another way that we can help someone? Let's say this quality time. How about making a date night with you and your wife or vice versa, or someone that you really care about? Make a date night and do something with them. Yes, it takes effort, doesn't it? It does, but it makes a difference. My wife says some of her most enjoyable times has been just sitting around a campfire camping and talking or singing or doing other things with other people. That adds quality time. It adds lots of other things that you're doing with each other. And I love it too. I'm so big into camping. And I believe that families, you know how they say that? Families that camp together stay together. I'm not saying all of you love camping. You don't have to. But when I'm sitting there with church members, and we have our camp out once a year at Mammoth Cave, and we have most of us camping out, and our tents are next to each other, and our kids are playing together, running around, and the adults are sitting there talking about different things. It could be religious or not religious. It could be fun. It could be singing or other things. I really feel like I get to know everybody there. Church doesn't allow that time right here when you're sitting to do that. There is something that you can do, though, that will help you spend more quality time with each other. And that's something that you are going to have today, I think. A potluck? Ah, a potluck is a great time to stay and eat and fellowship together. I can't tell you how many times, and you know this, in the Bible, that eating together has been used to help draw brethren closer together. So we all have to eat to stay alive. And what's better than to spend more time with each other on the Sabbath than to be able to do a potluck and see each other? There are some of you that travel for long distances to go to church. And it would be wonderful if you could spend more time with each other. You have facilities here that are so wonderful. And I wish there were more facilities out there for lots of members that would have to be able to do potlucks. Where we meet is beautiful and wonderful. It's a boardroom, and it has beautiful giant chairs and tables in front of them. And you'd think I'd be really thankful for that, but it makes people get sleepy more. No, I'm just teasing. No, it's a wonderful place, but they don't let us have a potluck there. They don't let us bring in food. We have to buy their food, which is very, very expensive. So sometimes we go ahead and we rent another center that we can have food, and those days are so wonderful. And as a matter of fact, a lot more people seem to come on potluck days, you know? So a lot more fellowshipping can be done. There's a lot of people that you may know that are lonely. Think about the widow. My mother is next door, and my dad passed away from Alzheimer's a few years ago. And the reason why she lives next to us is Laura, my sister. She built a house. Her and her husband built a house. And then they also built a spec house and invited us to move from California, where I was teaching in Imperial Schools, to come and live there. And they were making such a good offer. And we wanted to raise our kids out in the country, so we took it. So we live on some acreage next to my sister. Well, then, when my dad was going to get Alzheimer's, we knew what was going to happen, that my mom would need a lot more help. So we moved him, built a house between us. So we were both there, were able to share with each other, and help out with when my dad died. But now my mom is alone. And, you know, my daughter is wonderful because many times she goes over and just spends some time, just going to spend a few minutes and stays even longer. Or they play aggravation together. I don't know if you know what that game is. It's aggravating to me. But anyway, they seem to like it. Play games with her, and we try to spend time with her because you don't know how many people are in the church. If they live alone, I can almost guarantee you they're lonely. Now, if you're one person that lives alone, don't feel embarrassed about that. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Especially if you live alone and there are no church members very nearby. So those people are things, people we need to remember. As a matter of fact, there may be some people online right now that can't come to church for whatever reason, health-wise or otherwise. They would love to receive a note from you. Do you know these notes that people send for people who are sick? You may think it doesn't mean very much, just having everybody sign it and putting something on there. If you can write a sentence with your name, that's helpful. But if you can't just sign it, that's good too. I was laying in the hospital, and they didn't know if I was going to live or die at Vanderbilt University Hospital in the burn center. And I was so severely burned that I was being kept in a coma because they didn't know if I was going to live or not. I'd been burned on third-degree burns on 10 to 15% of my body, and they were waiting to see if my lungs would function, and they kept me on that. Do you know when I woke up and I saw the letters that had come from all the churches? It was so uplifting and so encouraging that it made my stay in the hospital so much better. And even to this day, I meet people who says, "Oh, I was praying for you." They'd never met me in their life. But that meant so much to me, and it makes so much difference to those people that you know that may need that. As a matter of fact, that's a different topic, but I will say that God healed me, and I was burned on this part of my body, and it was as black as could be. I thought my ear had burned off and my fingers had burned off. They were all as black as could be. And just all of this is just as ugly as it could be. And they worry about all the scars that are going to be left. And they wanted me to wear this compression vest to keep down the scars as much as they possibly could. And I couldn't wear it. It was just too uncomfortable. And I didn't wear that. And after a while, however long it was when I was in the hospital, they released me and said, "My wife has to treat me every day with the burns and change the bandages, and I have to come back every week for so long." After that, I was going to have to come back every month. I came back the first week dutifully and took off my shirt and all the parts where I was burned, and the nurse looked at me, and she looked at me up and down, and she said, "You are a good healer." And I thought to myself, I have a good healer. And the reason that you can look at me and not be distracted is only because that I do not have those scars. You don't see those scars. I can show you places where there's burns and you can tell the different colored skin and things like that. But I'm a teacher. It was so wonderful to be able to go back to work and not have to worry about that. I didn't miss a day of work. I was off for that summer. And by the time I went back to work, some people didn't even know anything about it. But that was all due because of other brethren who cared about me and God. They prayed to God, and they sent me messages which were so encouraging. So never forget that as an encouraging method to do. You can phone someone, you can text them, but obviously something you write that's a little bit longer is really good. So let me move on to the next one. So what's another way of encouraging other people? So we've got the quality time, we've got the gifts, we've got the words of encouragement. What am I missing? Anyone think of something I haven't mentioned? Okay, what is it? What kind of Bible verses?
Bible verses out of the Bible.
You read them or you send them to people? Oh, fantastic. That's a great way. I act a service for people. I have some people that do send messages in verse form, and many times I find out that's exactly what I wanted to hear. I needed to hear at the time.
Oh.
You don't know what they need, but for some reason that scripture strikes you. There is a connection between us, and we know that's God's Holy Spirit. So I'll talk about acts of service. That's the next one. I don't know if you are familiar with this, but, you know, helping other people and doing things for them. I mentioned that earlier because, you know, like I said, my wife loves acts of service. And I said there are two chores that she doesn't like to do, and that's dusting and folding clothes. So guess what I should do if I want to show her the proper love? I should be doing the folding of the clothes and also the dusting all the time. Well, she doesn't mind leaving those to me at any time, so I've got to commit to doing it even more and better. So, honey, you've heard it now. So that way, I want that to be my job and only my job. So we can do that. Well, it doesn't have to be that. It could be anything that you know of that they need or want. You know, the toilet paper rolls. This may sound like something silly, but my wife, she likes to put them in the wrong way. They roll to the back. You see what I mean? It's like, wait a minute. They need to roll to the front. That's obviously the way that they need to be done because you can see where the thing is and you can pull it. I can't find that thing in the back there all the time. So when I change the roll, you know how I put them in? I make it so it's facing the back, the way my wife likes them. Do you know how little work that is? And every time I do it, I like doing it. You know, it's funny that she doesn't even know I do it probably now. She just doesn't even know who's, you know, when I've changed the roles or whatever. But I'm just telling you, the thing is that God wants us to love others the way they want to be loved. God wants us to care about other people the way they like to be cared. And if they like acts of service, find ways to do those type of things. You know, where can you find those things? Again, I've mentioned it before about widows are almost always needing something. My mother calls me over and she feels guilty about doing it. I try to make sure she knows she shouldn't. And she asks me to get the squeak out of her door. Do you know how much time it takes to take WD-40 and spray on that little hinge and go back and forth? Oh, my mom is so appreciative. She just loves it. She loves that all the time, too. So, you know, and it's funny, I've noticed that all of the boys, when they come home, she has certain things they can do for her. So my electrical engineer brother, if she has something like the doorbell or something electrical that's not working, well, she calls on him to do that. My other brother, who builds houses for a living, if she has something else more major or something like this, or he needs the backhoe to transplant a tree, oh, that's the brother that does that. Well, I guess, you know, I get to do the little bitty things, you know. So like spraying WD-40, I'm very effective at that. I don't cause any problems, don't cause any mistakes. But anyway, it's nice to have a big family in that way. We have six kids in our family, so, and all of them are married and have their wives and their family and their husbands. And so she has quite a few people that come over and help her. But there's a lot of people that don't. And they're sitting at home and, you know, they're sad because they can't meet with you or can't do things with you. Find those people. It doesn't matter if they're in the church or not because, you know, the second great commandment, you know, is talking about loving your neighbor as yourself. And do a research and find out who your neighbor is. And I can tell you, you can't find someone who's not your neighbor. Who was that? Someone was famous, and he said, you know, he says, I've never met an enemy, only friends I haven't met yet, or something. He's talking about how he hasn't met anyone that's not his friend. Of course, that's not possible to have friends with, be friends with everybody, but you can be friendly. You can do nice things. And God even tells us, you know, to love our enemies and do good to those who don't do good to us. That's the second great commandment. And the more we do it, the more we're learning about it. So acts of service, can you think of things yourself? Well, the greatest act of service, as we know, was committed and done by Jesus Christ. Giving up his life, it says, the second great commandment. What's the best example that we'll give up our lives for somebody else? And he did. So if you want a concrete example, there it is. He does all of these things that I'm talking about, and he does them the best. He did them the best, and he continues to do them. There were 31 individual healings of Jesus Christ recorded in the Bible. Additionally, there are 11 times when the Bible records that Jesus healed many, and each required power to go out with Jesus. And each is an example of how Jesus loved through the act of service. John 9:6, Mark 7:32, Mark 8:23. You'll find these healings and other things he did for other people. He physically did these things. And these acts of service were quite incredible. Now, this healings that I'm talking about leads us directly at a segue to our fifth act of encouragement. Do you know that in the act of healing that God tells us when one of us is sick to go before the elders, and what does it say? Oh, they are supposed to pray for you, right? Anything else you hear about that in that scripture? What else does it say? Hands laid on you and be anointed. Is that interesting? Does God need an elder to be there to help you be healed? He asked for it to be done, though. And the elder puts his hands on your head, or elders, or whoever is there. There's a touch going on here. Do you think touch means anything to God or humans? He created us. Do you know there was a lady who touched his garment, and he felt power going out of him? She didn't even physically touch his skin. She touched his garment, and there was something that went from him out to her that he could feel. There's something about touching that God has put in human beings that makes a huge difference. And when someone is touching someone else and giving them a pat on the back or something like that, I don't know, but some people, that's their number one love language. And if they don't ever get that, this world teaches us all of these things or should be done away with in one way or another. And touching is one of those things because it's touchy. And some people don't like that gift. And if you cannot recognize when someone doesn't really want a hug, don't give them a hug. If you can't recognize that, be very cautious about who you hug, okay? So, but I'm saying that if they do like hugs, and I have hugged people that I felt very comfortable hugging, and they immediately told me, I'm a hugger too. You're a hugger, I'm a hugger, we're a hugger too. Anyway, the point being is that if they enjoy it, that's fantastic. That's their love language. But be very cautious and careful. Side hugs are really good. Handshakes are wonderful. Maybe that's as far as you can go with a handshake. If you go to the Bowling Green Church, I'm sorry, but you're going to be inundated with hugs. It's been it's been an atmosphere that's been created there by some crazy guy that hugs everybody that comes in. And this crazy guy that hugs everybody from kids to adults and everything has gone all through the group. But when I stand up there and I have a new person who may have been inundated with maybe too many hugs possibly, I say, well, we are a church that is a hugging church, but just be thankful, not back in the early church when they said, greet each other with a hug and a kiss, a holy kiss. So if you come to our church, don't worry, I won't be kissing you. So if the worst thing is I'm giving you a hug, then hopefully that's a good thing. But yes, really, truly, make sure you're very careful with that one. But healing touch and the touch of others is so important. There was a man in our church that I knew did not like hugs, so I'd always shake his hand. And his name was Mr. Tuttle, and he wouldn't mind me saying this to you. But Mr. Tuttle, over time, one time he finally came to me and said, Kevin, I think it'd be okay if you hugged me. Oh, I was so excited. I finally got to give Mr. Tuttle a hug. And do you know after that, Mr. Tuttle would come and find me if I hadn't given him his goodbye hug. I have to give certain people hello hugs and goodbye hugs every Sabbath, and he was one of them. He turned out to be someone who so loved hugs that I mentioned him one time at a feast site where there were 700 people there. And do you know, by the end of the feast, that man came to me every day smiling and telling me how many hugs he had gotten. And he just could not believe at the end of the feast that he had received as many hugs as he did. But I can tell you, every day of that feast, his emotional tank was filled. So it was a very unusual thing. And I love Mr. Tuttle. And I feel so much better when he comes to church. And I know he wants a hug. And he's looking for that hug. So if I miss people at church, they will come and find me. So that's really good. It's nice to have a small enough church that there's a small enough church there, right? Can you imagine how tired you'd be if there was a large church that did this every time? In Matthew 17:7, we read that Jesus came and touched them, saying, rise and have no fear. In Matthew 18:14, we read, he touched their hand and the fever left her. When Jesus saw Simon's mother-in-law lying, he took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her. Mark 1:31. They who had any who were sick and various diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on every one of them and healed them. Luke 4:40. Jesus didn't have to touch. You know, just like the centurion, he didn't have to go and be there and touch them, but he chose to do that because he made humans. He knows what we need. So if Christ made it a point to touch other people, then that is appropriate in appropriate situations. And again, I do say just be cautious, because it doesn't matter if you think it's good and you like to be touched. There are some people that don't, and there's no reason to drain their emotional tank. There's no faster way to drain someone's emotional tank than try to do something for them that is doing the opposite. So just like the little kids, we have to watch out for the adults. We as adults, we hide our emotions, don't we? And again, I think there's something about us that says we don't want to look weak. We don't want people to know that we're needing a hug, or that we have encouragement, or that our emotional tank is low. I can tell you when your emotional tank is low. I can tell when mine is low. What will you see? You'll see a smiling face not be so smiling. You'll see someone who is normally sane get upset about things that are totally unreasonable about getting upset with. We get tired, and when we're emotionally drained, we don't control our emotions, nor do we show love to those that are around us. Do we need our emotional tanks filled to be the best Christians we possibly can? The answer is absolutely yes. Do we want to fulfill the second great commandment? Do we want to become sources of encouragement for other people? Today you've heard a lot of practical ways to do that. Now it's up to us to go out and practice being sources of encouragement.